Begin transmission. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this very special St. Patrick's Day episode of Outer Rim's Transmission. We are joined by the full crew tonight, Milton and Ben, for what is going to be a very interesting episode. We have some really good stuff to talk about with the Bad Batch, and, well, we got differing opinions on the Battlefront Classic Connection, and that's saying a little bit, not even giving it much thought. So we're going to get into all that this week on episode 145. I have some cool stuff to talk about when it comes to my week in Star Wars, but does anybody else have anything to share first?
I would say for me, you know, it's always great talking Star Wars here every week. So that's the big thing to say for sure. But yeah, for me, I would say my week in Star Wars, it was pretty good overall. Like, I had, you know, I finished up the second Hand of Thrawn book, Visions of the Future. That was a excellent book, really good ending. You get some great stuff with Luke and Mara and Talon Card, and like even some like hints to like the unknown region stuff. So like, you know, it's cool just seeing the way they built out like the EU back in the day. So I had a good time finishing up that audiobook, and I'm on to the next audiobook now. I just started it today. I listened to the first chapter. It's called Survivor's Quest. It takes place 3 years after this, and basically it's a, you know, it's basically 3 years prior to like the Yuuzhan Vong War, and it's still Timothy Zahn writing it. And the cool thing is this book, I mean, based on the audiobook intro, I mean, it's Mark Thompson narrating it, of course. But it came out in one of the Essential Legends drops, Chris, because like it's labeled as Essential Legends. So I was like, oh, that's cool. So I'm starting that. I literally started that today. So yeah, I have that going on, and then I have a lady friend I've been getting to know lately, and she actually has gone and to like surprise me, I guess she's gone and watched episodes 1 through 5 so far since this past Monday, actually. So so it's been a pretty good week overall, and she's been enjoying Star Wars for the most part and having a good time with it. So it's great just seeing people get introduced to Star Wars that have never ever seen it before and know nothing about it.
Yeah, that's interesting about Survivor's Quest, because I don't know anything about this sort of era in Star Wars storytelling with the Legends post Return of the Jedi besides Thrawn trilogy. So you're telling me that this book written by Timothy Zahn is kind of part of like that whole Yuuzhan Vong?
Yes. Oh, okay. So here's the thing. So I just finished up the Hand of Thrawn duology. This book, the Hand of Thrawn duology, like the second book, Visions of the Future. It's great because like Zahn was already laying kind of the groundwork leading into the Yuuzhan Vong stuff.
Really?
Because see, in the book, so the Hand of Thrawn is a literal, it's like a hidden fortress, you know, full of intelligence and weaponry. And like, it's basically a fortress on the outer, in the outer rim, okay, close to the unknown regions, you know, like it's on the edge of the galaxy basically. And it's basically like an underground, sect of Imperials. Like they're waiting on Thrawn's return pretty much basically. So, you know, they're there in hiding, even like Admiral Paleon, and nobody knows it. Like none of the people know about him there. It's a total secret group. So anyways, Luke and Mara end up going to that place, and you know, they go through there, they you know, they deal with them, all these things, whatever. And like when R2 like plugs into the computer, you know, after Mara and Luke like complete the mission and go through all the like, you know, the big adventure that they go on, you know, they're in the ship leaving, mm-hmm, escaping. And like R2, you know, he's like, you know, what did R2 pull up? And Mara was like, well, you know, he pulled up stuff on these Imperials, but he also pulled up on some of the maps and layouts of some of the parts of the unknown regions, you know, where these Imperials were talking about, you know, because the Imperials that they ran into, like the guy literally said, like, you know, there's far worse like fears and like way worse things out there than just the Empire. Like, you know, there's things way worse than you can even imagine, worse than the Empire and the unknown regions that we've experienced and stuff. So like, it's kind of alluding to it. And then now, you know, fast forward to Survivor's Quest, even in the first chapter of Survivor's Quest, Luke and Mara are on like the Outer Rim, you know, they're going to this pretty much bar, and it's great. It's classic Star Wars at its finest, okay. In my opinion. You know, it's classic A New Hope kind of Star Wars vibes, like Mara's getting sent by Talon Card to go meet with this smuggler he used to work with and basically say, hey, we're cutting business relations. And, you know, of course, things go sideways and the guy tries to pull. See, now the cool thing is this book, I believe, was written after The Phantom Menace, because the cool thing is, take a guess what happens. So you have Mara talking about, you know, Mara's talking to this smuggler and she, you know, all of a sudden, you know, she's like, oh, how do you think you have an upper hand on me? I'm a Jedi now, all this stuff. And he's like, oh, the one thing, you know, the Jedi dealt with during the Clone Wars, and like a platform raises up behind her and it's a droidica sitting there. And because the guy had it like in storage, like a, you know, a vintage droidica basically. And so like so you get that, and then like, you know, you have some action take place and it's cool. It's classic, like, you know, because you're like, where the heck's Luke at? And, you know, like Mara's like seen out of the corner of her eye, like, you know, a green thing come around the edge of the flooring of the droidica, and all of a sudden the droidica's, and then, you know, just action, Luke and her jumping into action and stuff. And like, anyway, so like you have that happen, and, you know, they're already referencing, like, even in that bar sequence, they're referencing on, you know, what's in the unknown regions, and like, you know, they're hinting at like something could be out there and that sort of stuff. So like Zahn was already setting that up before they even started like the entire Yuuzhan Vong 22 book thing, you know? So it's cool seeing the way Zahn kind of laid in little hints and groundwork leading up to the big span that was the whole Yuuzhan Vong war stuff. So it's just really cool seeing them set this stuff up.
Yeah, Milton, have you read this one or listened to it, Survivor's Quest?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's interesting. The reason why I asked this, Ben, is because to this day they have not gone into the Vector Primes of it all, of that whole thing, right? They haven't reprinted that one with the Essential Legends. It's almost like they're kind of afraid or timid to do it because maybe it's going to cross streams with the sequel trilogy. They're going to think people are going to get confused or some weird thing. That's my conspiracy theory of it all. It's like they're doing every possible thing like pre Phantom Menace with all those books and during the original trilogy, but now they're like, oh wait, we do have Survivor's Quest, oh we do have the Throne trilogy. So this is interesting because maybe they will reprint those eventually. I'm sure they will. It's just a matter of when, yeah. Not if.
I know. I mean, when I finished up Visions of the Future, I tweeted Mark Thompson and said, hey, we need to get on that entire Yuuzhan Vong, yep, you know, 22 book arc. I said, we need to get you going on it. And he liked my tweet the other day of me saying that. So I was like, okay, cool. At least that's kind of on his radar, because, like, you know, I even had like a random person that doesn't even follow me or anything see my tweet somehow. I guess it was maybe because he liked it or something. Mm-hmm. But like they responded to me, to my tweet, and was like, oh yeah, we would love to see you, or we would love to hear him do those books and stuff, because, you know, he does a really great, all his Star Wars work is really great. And like, that's another recommendation. If anyone hasn't heard like his Thrawn voice from like the Heir to the Empire series, or like his Thrawn voice, like, man, I love Lars's, like, it's just two separate things. Like, Lars's voice is really great, and his voice is really great, because, like, even years ago, I remember when Rebels first kicked off with Thrawn back then with Lars, I remember John Campia talking on his show, like, you know, he's like, yeah, this Lars Mikkelsen's really good, but, like, he's like, if you guys didn't know, there's this Mark Thompson guy who does a Thrawn voice for the audiobooks, and his voice is, like, amazing. And his voice, like, sometimes I hear Lars's voice when I think of Thrawn. Other times I hear Mark Thompson's, because it's so distinct once you hear it. But yeah, so that's just a big recommendation for anybody. You know, if you want to get into the audiobooks, I would say a good start, if you want to get into the Legends audiobooks, that is, a good start would be start with the Heir to the Empire trilogy, go to the Hand of Thrawn duology, and then go on to the Survivor's Quest book, because it's kind of like, you know, we say the Filoni verse, but it's kind of like the Zahn verse of, you know, the Zahn book. So, and, you know, they all kind of just play off each other. So, you know, it's good continuity, because, like, even in the first chapter of Survivor's Quest, you have them kind of referencing stuff from Visions of the Future. So, just a little audiobook recommendation there.
Yeah. Bill, we haven't heard from you in about 2 weeks' time. So what's happening with you these days with Star Wars? Any retro gaming, Any movies introduced to your person over there? What's going on with you, man?
No movies were reintroduced to her at this time. Just been kind of busy the last couple weekends with family stuff and other obligations. But even with video games, nothing really with video games, honestly. Like, my life has been consumed with actually adulting, unfortunately. So, but when it comes to Star Wars, I did revisit some of the animations this past week when I was at the excuse me, when I was at the gym. I was doing some cardio at the end of my workout, and I'm a big fan of the Star Wars Visions, so I was watching the not the episode itself, but the fight with the twins of season two. I think that was season two. But I love that particular fight with the twins and how it plays out, and I think because I'm a huge anime fan, seeing that was beyond. And then also, I guess tying into Star Wars too, I'm a big fan of martial arts movies, so I did just watch John Wick 4. And being a Star Wars guy who loves that those characters, Donnie Yen was one of the lead assassins in John Wick 4. So that made me go back to rewatch some of his stuff in Rogue One. So he played a blind character in that role too, as he plays a blind assassin in John Wick 4. But it was really cool to see how dope he was as both two different characters, but they were both blind and kicking people's asses.
Oh my
So
gosh,
that was my week in Star Wars.
I mean, one of the leaders in Star Wars Limited's training card game. You get these leaders that command your forces, and it's a really neat centerpiece of your base or whatever. But one of them is Chirrut Imwe, and I'm like really surprised by such an obscure character is already hitting the game in the first set, and it just brings me back to again like how good Donnie Yen is, like kung fu, and I don't know if it's kung fu, but like just martial arts in general, whatever it is he specializes in. Seeing that on the screen back in 2016 for the first time, just it was absolutely amazing seeing this very visceral, fast-handed combat against stormtroopers with a staff and like shattering their eye lenses and like just crazy stuff. It was just like this is never in Star Wars, but it feels so welcome to be in it, you know? It's awesome.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think this is what fans are looking for when it comes to the action in Star Wars, because even with both of the characters, again, one being an assassin, one being like a Jedi monk in its own way, and the similarities, however, if you look at both characters, they both were using some type of like melee staff weapon, and see how Donnie Yen is so fast and so athletic, and it's so second nature. I mean, he's a true martial artist, and it seems so easy for him to play these characters that don't rely on your eyes. He has just another sense. I mean, martial artists or being a martial artist is very much like being a Jedi in its own way. It's all about balance, discipline, a sheer will. You can't always trust your visuals. You got to feel your way sometimes. So it's dope to see that the two characters, how similar they very much were.
Oh man, yeah, good stuff all around. So, I had a pretty cool milestone myself this week with my week in Star Wars. So, I was able to introduce some young people in my life to Star Wars for the first time, and it was a really cool experience, man. I got to show my 4-year-old nephew and my 8-year-old niece Star Wars. I was waiting for it. I was waiting for it. Like, we've never sat down and watched a full movie together. The other like a month ago, we like started watching Clone Wars, but it was like right before they had to leave, so I don't think they really absorbed much from the Clone Wars movie. But I was like, all right, guys, we're gonna watch a movie tonight. We're gonna watch A New Hope, and I was very hesitant because, I've been hearing things around the internet and all. I was like, oh yeah, kids don't like that anymore. They like Marvel more. They like, the superheroes. And I was like, well, this movie's like 50 years old, guys, so buckle up. Like, this is gonna be either sink or swim for this franchise. And by the end of it was like my niece gave it a 10 out of 10 without me even asking her. She's like, that was a 10 out of 10, this movie is incredible. She's like, I gotta watch the next one, because Disney Plus, it pops up for Empire Strikes Back next. And then my sister was like, or no, it wasn't her, but it was basically like it was already like 10:30 and it was way past her bedtime. I was like, sorry guys, we're gonna have to watch that another day. You're gonna have to find a reason to come back over again, and that way we can watch Empire. But Yeah, it was really cool because the whole time my niece was sitting there and just absorbed into it. Then my 4-year-old nephew was asking like 100 questions a minute, like really like asking everything, like, oh, you know, Ben Kenobi sacrificing himself at the end. He's like, why did he sacrifice himself? Because they could get away. I was like, yeah, it doesn't really make that much sense when you think about it. So like, it was funny because like, would he have bought that much time for Luke, Leia, and all them to get away before Vader could just like force like lift the Falcon or something? But it was like really funny because here I am with a 4-year-old having like an in-depth discussion on a version on a Star Wars I'd never had with anybody else, and I'm like, I've never actually had this conversation with any of the many people I know in this community. And this 4-year-old and me are going back and forth. And my niece is over there saying, shut up, guys. I'm trying to listen to the movie. I'm trying to watch the movie. And I was like, I had this moment where I was like, I feel really proud right now as an uncle that these kids are actually enjoying this movie. It really shows there that this Star Wars is timeless. It doesn't matter if it was made in the 70s. These kids are growing up on all these cartoons, Spider-Man and all that, and they still like the heck out of this movie. So, I mean, obviously George Lucas was onto something. I was second generation Star Wars, right? I didn't come into it until pretty much special editions, sequel, prequels, and people are coming into it, sequel trilogy. And now there's people like this generation with my niece and nephew that are coming in after the sequel trilogy. But I was kind of like, ooh, do I show them episode one first? Or do I show them the way I've seen it? And I was like, you know, George Lucas intended you to watch episode 4. Long story short, I'm just really happy that they enjoyed it. Because now they know what the heck all this stuff behind me is. When they come up here, they're going to say, oh, that's Darth Vader. Oh, that's a Stormtrooper. Oh, that's Luke Skywalker. And they're going to actually know what the heck this stuff is. I was actually really concerned because at certain moments I was like, oh, they're going to be so scared of this part. They're going to be so scared.
Were they scared of the Tuskens or?
No, they were not scared at all. And then I've never like sat through my niece and nephew watching something about a dead corpse on fire. You know, their poor Aunt Beru and my niece is like, oh, is that Luke's uncle and aunt? And I was like, yeah, sorry. Unfortunately, that is them. That's their skeletons. I'm like, yep. And they just got really silent. They're just like, oh.
Oh my gosh. That's interesting. Well, that's the thing is though about A New Hope that's like so charming to so many people is of course like the movie as a whole was excellent. But it's just I heard one of our other friends talking, or one of my other friends on their show, Star Wars Santa, and he had a couple of people, like Jason Ward of them, they were talking about like the charm of the original trilogy. And the reason why those movies, especially A New Hope, work so good is, you know, when George was shooting A New Hope, you know, he just came off of American Graffiti, and he had like the idea of shooting A New Hope like a documentary, as if you were sitting there watching this like event go on, versus like, say, you know, the more modern movies, even to an extent, some of the stuff you see, you know, you only get a few of those moments really in the prequels, you know, because in even the prequel era, it's more like you have more action shots, you know, shot, versus like, you know, these shots that really just sit and focus on like a scene and stuff. And that's probably why like the originals can resonate so good with like younger kids like that, because like, you know, their attention, you know, an 8-year-old's attention is only so much. And, you know, when you're sitting there focusing on one scene, you see Ben Kenobi telling the story to Luke, or you see, you know, you have all these things, like, it's shot in such a good way where it's, like, you know, really can, like, hone in with a kid versus, like, we're talking, even we mentioned Rogue One, like, you know, Rogue One has a lot of snappy shots in it, like, you know, when they're on Jeddah, it's, you know, cameras jumping around here to there versus, like, just sitting on the scene. So, like, I think that's one of the biggest helps of A New Hope, especially for, like, you know, a younger kid like that versus, you know, like you said, watching, say, a Marvel movie, for example, where they have a million shots.
Yeah, and it seems like, I think I heard from my mom, who watches my nephew some days a week, he's already starting to, like, pretend about Star Wars. He's already starting to, like, pick up sticks and, you know, think they're lightsabers and stuff. I'm like, oh, I got him. My sister's probably going to hate me now because she's going to have to go out and buy all these damn toys the next time they go to Walmart or Target. So that was my week in Star Wars. And I'm looking forward to reporting on the next time I watch the next film with them. So I'll keep you guys updated on the podcast here with that. But I think that has gone on long enough, as we usually do. It's been you know, a couple weeks since we sat here and talked to Milton, so it's good to kind of chat about, you know, the normal stuff here and there. But getting into it, this week we have a couple releases. We have Darth Vader issue number 44, Mace Windu issue number 2, and the High Republic issue number 4. High Republic Adventures, sorry, issue number 4 from Dark Horse Comics. All those comics have been discussed in detail on this channel in a video. You can check that out. And also on the Star Wars Underworld Network. I'm there with Matthew, as I always am. This time, I think we did it on Thursday morning, but usually we go live every Wednesday night. And I'll talk about next week because I'm not going to actually be here. But the big thing that came out this week, and this is our next topic transitioning, is we had the Battlefront Classic Collection. This was announced. It's brought to us by Aspyr, and it's basically a port, right? This is a collection of Battlefront 1, Battlefront 2. It's made so that, you know, consoles can now play it on the widescreens. It's got the up-res textures. There's nothing really done under the hood necessarily, like a actual remaster or an actual remake, but it's there for the people to enjoy that maybe want to play it on a newer hardware that can't really support the old version or whatever. So I'm going to throw it over to you, Ben. What was your initial take on this? I know you've played quite a bit over the last week.
Yeah, I mean, I played quite a bit over the weekend with you know, with friends and my cousin. We played through like the campaign over at his house, which was fun. Yep. Both games. That was a lot of fun. Like, I had a really good time with it. And, you know, like we mentioned, or I'm sure people have seen mine out, like, there was a lot of issues with the launch, whether it be, like, controls or, you know, servers being down or things like that. But, like, overall, like, of course, it's not perfect. It's a 20-year-old game. but, like, overall for me, like, my experience was probably... say a strong 7, I would say, you know, like a strong 7. It was fun for what it was. Like I said, it was fun playing the offline modes and stuff because, like, hey, that was one of the best charms back in the day.
Yeah.
Of those games, really, was playing offline with your friends, because who back in 2004, 2005 really had Xbox Live, you know, because back then you were having to have, you know, your Xbox hooked up halfway across the house to the whatever Ethernet stuff. Yeah. And all those things. Like, you know, most of the time it was just what do you call it, Chris? Like co-op couch player.
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
like,
you know, couch co-op. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Couch co-op. Yeah, couch co-op. That's the term I was looking for. Yeah, it was more like that. So, like, for that aspect of it, the game was fun. Like, I had a good time with it. Like, it was a good time. It was funny. Like, one of my friends was having such a hard time in the first game because, and it is hard too. Like, the Geonosis level is very hard in the campaign because, like, you have to, like, destroy the droid towers.
Okay.
You have to, like, you know, take out all the droid tanks, and you have to take over the spire and do all those things, and Count Dooku's, like, roaming around the map and all these things. So, like, it literally is just kind of, like, playing out the entire sequence from Attack of the Clones. Whoa. So it's a lot of fun in that aspect on the first game's campaign. So we played through that, and then, of course, like I said, we played through Rise of the Empire. So we had a good time there. And then, like I said, I played some online play as well. You know, the first couple days, it was, like, definitely buggy and things like that because, you know, like, there was issues. Like, it was undeniable. There's issues there to it. But I feel like, you know, I've been on and off the game the last couple days, and I feel like it's a little bit better maybe because, like, you know, they got the servers going a bit more and whatnot because, like, you know, we've seen plenty of other games, like, have, like, billion-dollar games or millions and millions games having launch issues versus, like, you know, I was talking to one of my friends about it, or even my cousin when you were over there. He was like, gosh, what do you think of these launch issues? Like, I told him, I was like, dude, the only thing is you got to think about it this way. Like, when it comes to even Aspyr, they probably had such a small team working on this.
Oh, they
project.
Have a tiny team on this thing.
It's probably, like, 3 people versus, like, for example, MLB launching Thursday night. You know, that game was crashed. Like, my cousin, me and my cousin were on Xbox till 2:30 in the morning.
Oh,
and he's like, dude, I still can't get on. So he sat there for the 2 hours he couldn't get on, and he just designed his stadium for MLB because he said, I can't even access Diamond Dynasty. So he sat there and just designed a stadium for 2.5 hours and stuff. And he's, and like I told him, they, SDS probably has a huge team working on MLB The Show's launch. So, like, you know, that's my thing with this launch of Battlefront, where it's like, yeah, they probably got a tiny team, and they're probably getting some tweaks worked out in the back end.
Yeah.
So overall, like I said, for me, it's probably a solid 7. It's a strong 7, I would say, overall with my experience with it so far.
Yeah, I think you summed it up really well, right? I think especially now.
I do want to add in there too. Real quick too. Another thing too, we didn't really know about, like, I mean, you know, we didn't really in our group chat initially when the game first launched on Thursday, but there's actually achievements for the game now. Like, there's achievements available. But like my friend got one. He forgot to like click into it or whatever, but he got one for like Good Soldiers Follow Orders was on there. He got, which I would assume that's probably Order 60. It's probably from the campaign, I would guess, from Rise of the Empire, probably Order 66 or something. But he had Good Soldiers Follow Orders. He had one like Set for Stun, which is like, I'm assuming that's probably like from the Tantive IV mission, I would assume, with Leia. But yeah, like you have actual Xbox achievements now on there too. And I'm not sure how PlayStation works, because I don't have any experience with that. But on Xbox, there's actual achievements now, so keep an eye out for that. If anyone's listening, like, you know, you can get achievements.
Yeah, yeah. So it's great to hear that you're having a good experience, because I think a lot of people will, especially now that it's been a couple of days. There's definitely been hot fixes. There's definitely been, I'm not sure if there's been actual client-side patches. So the thing is with these bugs, most of them will be probably, I would hopefully say, probably fixed by the time a lot of people decide, hey, maybe they find it on sale months down the road. Oh, the game will be, you know, pretty much really, really just fine the way it is. Because that's what it is. It's a port. This is not supposed to remaster, overhaul any graphics. It's not supposed to add new mechanics, new levels, anything like this. Is supposed to be just game preservation, where it gets people to allow them to play a game that they played 20 years ago on a newer system. And the main thing they added was the online multiplayer. And I think for a lot of people, that is where we're getting a lot of these big articles online is, oh my gosh, I paid $35 for this game, and the reason why is I paid for the multiplayer I wanted to play, and I can't play the multiplayer because they open up the servers on, you know, and there's like three servers, and none of them are filled out of like thousands of people playing. There's like 64 players on each server. It's like, wait, what's going on here, right? Like, there's obvious concerns with the whole multiplayer aspect, yeah.
Yeah, I do want to hop in there too. I do think another thing about that is, like, that is a misstep on them for okay, so like when you clicked into Battlefront 1, you know, there was literally three servers. I saw, like, I clicked into it, but on Battlefront 2 there was more, like, you know, the list, you know, you could scroll through like a list of servers. I think they really didn't expect people at all to engage with the first game very much. I really don't, because, like, you know, like, even on the first day I was scrolling through Battlefront 2, and, you know, there was how many servers, like, I clicked into. I didn't like scroll through the whole list just because I clicked into games, but like on the first game there was literally three servers. There was, like, I saw them on there. So I think they just assumed people were probably gonna play the second game, and they were just like, oh, we'll just launch the first, you know, and just let it be or something. But yeah, like you said, it would have been like, I don't know, I feel like that's another thing too with people, with companies in general, they underestimate the Star Wars fandom, I would say, because look at what EA just did with the Mandalorian stuff. They axed that entire thing because of, you know, there wasn't Jedi in the Mando stuff. So, like, you know, they're underestimating, like, Star Wars fans' capabilities, I would say, or interests. Like, you know, because, I mean, realistically, if you'd had any of us three, or anybody in their 30s that have any experience with games, or even early 40s with games over the last 20 years, and that are even a moderate Star Wars fan, they probably, all three of us would have easily said, hey, we might want to be ready because the Star Wars fandom has mega nostalgia for this franchise. So, like, you know, we might want to be ready for that.
Yeah. So basically, I was hoping that this week I'll come here and say this game is great. I was really banking on, especially coming off of the what is it? The last game I played, Dark Troopers. Not Dark Troopers. Oh my gosh, I just totally blanked. Dark Forces. Dark Forces remastered by Night Dive Studios. Those guys knocked that one out of the park. Granted, it's a remaster, so there's a little bit more that went into that game than what Asper literally just translated. Almost, I wouldn't want to say copy paste file, but it's kind of probably similar to that. So I'm riding the high off of playing. Put it this way, I'm riding the high off of playing a classic Star Wars game that I'm able to play on my you know big rig here on the PC. So I'm going into this thing. This is basically a layup. This is a layup for them to just get this game to play well and has achievements, and I'm happy. That's all I want. I hop into Battlefront 1, and I'm an inverted guy. You know, I have to go press up on the right analog stick to look down, sort of guy. Right? That's how I play games. I've been that way for my whole life. And I find out that there's no option to switch that. And that has been in game since the N64 days, since the beginning of the onset of analog sticks. I was talking to my one buddy today at work, and I was telling him, he said, yeah, that was an option in the original game. And I'm looking, I'm doing research, and they're like, yeah, you could have done that in the original game. They literally took that part out of the game. Well, I don't know what the heck they did with the source code, Asper, but they really screwed it bad. Because as a player, I cannot play your game if I do not have the controls. It's like, the thing is with gaming now today, in 2024, there's a big push for accessibility. Whether people that are blind, people that just do not have the motor function in their hands, they have to use other appendages or whatever. And games have been really good with that lately. So this is literally the bottom line quality of life thing that has been going on for 30 years. How do you not put that in the game? It's absolutely ridiculous. So, of course, I couldn't play the game. I refunded the game instantly because I was like, I cannot put up with a developer that was so ignorant to such a large audience of people that they couldn't put that in the game. Like, I mean, that's a game-breaking thing. Like, you push your game to a delay if you can't put in such a simple thing like that. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why the game was announced so far ahead or so short of head. We learned this game was coming a month ago. Why did it have to come out this month? Push it back 2-3 months. Like, there was no reason to have this game come out this month if it was going to be coming out to this level of bugs and everything. There hold on a second, Ben. There's rubber banding in the multiplayer, right? There's just a lot of connection issues, netcode issues. The main reason if I put a poll out right now, I would say a lot of people would probably going to buy this game for the reason that they're bringing 64 multiplayer for the first time to online functionality to these systems. That's a big draw for people. And for that function to not work out of the box, it's a huge miss. And I don't know who's making the decisions over there, if it's Lucasfilm Games, if it's Asper, a combination of the two, but I don't know how anybody thought this was ready. There's a department of people for quality assurance. How do these people not catch this ahead of time? I'm flabbergasted how we're still getting, and this is something that's been happening a lot in gaming. And I guess that's why I'm more sensitive to it than like the average gamer, because we keep seeing this time and time and time again, where these games keep getting pushed out and they're not finished. And in this case, it's like a game that's, for some people like me, you can't even play the game. That's really bad. So, I mean, I myself say, yeah, buy this, buyers beware, because maybe you'll have a good time with it if you could play regular. But if you're an inverted player, don't buy this game. I don't know if they updated that yet, but I've already been burned already. I'm not going to be buying this game at this point, so I can't tell you when they're going to add that feature in. But it's just sad to see. I was really looking forward to playing this, and I did try my best to play it the other way, and I was just not having an enjoyable experience. So I was like, I gotta go. I gotta get my money back.
Yeah, I mean that's totally understandable. I mean, I think, like I said, it kind of harkens back to my point of, like, you know, I think they underestimated Star Wars fans of, like, how many people would actually be interested in this game, because it's a 20-year-old game, and they probably were estimating, you know, Battlefront has such a bad reputation as it is because of the recent game. They probably thought, yeah, there might be a few people getting on this game, but it won't be, a lot of people, but they just didn't realize every Star Wars YouTuber was going live at midnight Thursday night. You know, like Star Wars Theory had like 20,000 people on his stream, you know, counting down to the release, you know? So like, I mean, heck, probably a good chunk of his audience was sitting there on their consoles ready to go, thousands of them. And like, you know, him, even like our friend Hannah was streaming, like a lot of people were streaming Thursday for that game. You know, I saw people on Twitch and everything. So like, I think they really underestimated Star Wars fans of how much they would be interested in this game just because of like the reputation Battlefront has, I would say now. But yeah, it's just, I mean, you have that, you have all those issues you mentioned. And even like you said, like with these companies, it's just like, that's my issue with gaming in general nowadays, is like you have so many companies where it's like, It's like, you know, everyone knows on here I'm a big Madden person. And like there's a content creator named The Actual CC. He's like a big Madden creator. Mm-hmm. And he used to work in tech in the gaming industry. And he said like his department was over QA, quality assurance testing. And he said that's one of the things that makes him so mad about all these sports games, Madden, MLB, 2K. They all release and then they basically release a half-baked game where it's like 60-70% done, and then they wait for the community to give all its feedback for the first 2 weeks, then they release start a season patch versus actually testing the games themselves, because you know it's cost cutting. You know, why pay a team when you have a community of millions of people to test it for you? You know, that's bad, but that's kind of how it is. And like and it just feels like you have that, it's like, to me, it just kind of feels like a lot of the gaming industry is just kind of like lazy with stuff nowadays, where it's just like, oh, let people test it. And like, this is no different. I mean, you know what, like, you know, they were probably just like expecting, oh, hey, like there's not gonna be a lot of Star Wars fans like checking this game out, whatever. We'll just kind of like, you know, like you said, copy paste it, turn on some online servers and go and hope for the best. So you have that.
Oh, man.
But like, one thing I do want to say, though, a positive thing that came out of this, though, at least, is for the second game, anybody that has it, you know, they have all the DLC that was available back in the day. And, you know, not many people had Xbox Live, like, you know, back then. So people didn't really have access to it. But so for like Battlefront 2, for example, you can play heroes versus villains, I think almost on every map, actually, pretty much. And then also the cool thing is, so if you think about it, this game was made, I mean, it came out in 05, but, you know, it had been being developed in like 03, 04. So you have actually the bonus characters in it are Kit Fisto and Azaj Ventress. And the cool thing about both of them are they're actually designed from the Tartakovsky Clone Wars, because think, Clone Wars wasn't invented then yet. Like our 3D animation Clone Wars. So Kit Fisto and Azaj were based off the Tartakovsky version. Like Azaj's looks the same, the way her eyes, the way she moves, all that stuff looks the same. And then the cool thing though is Kit Fisto is really neat, because they take him right out of the anime series straight up, because his lightsaber is like kind of like when you swing with it, it's kind of like electrified, like how it looks when he's under, like when he's underwater, it has like, it kind of has like an electrical, like, you know, circular thing around it. Like, so, you know, because that's what it looks like when he's underwater in the Tartakovsky Clone Wars.
Okay.
And then like his secondary attack is like this like energy ball thing, which he kind of like, you know, in the Clone Wars, he like takes an energy ball of like force water and like throws it. So like, you know, it's cool that they have that version of Kit Fisto and Azaj Ventress in there for like anybody that's fans of the OG Clone Wars.
Yeah, real quick, Ben, your left shoulder is like taking the majority up of your frame there in the webcam.
Oh, whoops! Hold on, I'll adjust it here.
There we go. Okay, now we can see you.
Sorry, I bumped my desk. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I want to get Milton in on this conversation, because I know he's been chomping at the bit to probably say something about this, because you know, good old Star Wars video games and their misfortune and all.
You know how I feel about this. Like, I have no opinion, because it's all bull. It's all bullshit. Listen, my relationship with the Star Wars video games have been not good in the last 10 years. I don't trust what EA or whoever's working on the games, Lucasfilm, Disney, whomever, because there's always some delay. There's always some you. I mean,
same
again,
story, different day.
How do you mess up a legendary game like Battlefront? How? Whether it's a relaunch, whether it's a, you know, a rebrand, I don't know. How do you mess that up? I really don't have much else to say, because there's no excuse for it. I'm just keep it real. I'm just keep it simple.
Yeah,
it's laughable. I'm never surprised. Like, honestly, like, people may think, oh, Milton, you're being extra, or you're being like, you know, you're not giving them the benefit of the doubt. I have for 10 years now, ever since literally Lucasfilm or LucasArts have been disbanded, we've not had what we had. Had, you know, the Jedi Survivor games, but consistently, on a consistent basis, everyone can look at the evidence. The gaming for Star Wars has been less than stellar. And this is the reason why. Because there's no consistency. There's cost cutting. I get there's economic struggles. I get, you know, they have to be, you know, concise and condensed and all that kind of BS. But we don't care about that. Just make us consistent games. I mean, I don't. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, Milton, to throw in there with you on this point, here's my caveat to all this stuff that I said. Don't get me wrong. I enjoyed the game, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Everyone heard what I said. But this is no surprise. Like, this is no surprise at all. Like that's the thing. I enjoyed the game and all this stuff. But the thing is, all these issues, all these things, it's no surprise, because it just feels so sloppy. Like, because look, other than the two Jedi games, have we really had anything that successful? I mean, like, Battlefront came back, like we talked about, Chris, but, like, it was pretty much dead for almost 2 years.
I turned that game back. Like, I don't understand. I legit told the person, because I wasn't hearing great things about it. I said, if this game isn't good, I'm bringing it back the next day, and I'm getting my full refund. And that was back at GameStop days where they didn't do that. And I brought it back next day, and I said, I want my full $59.99 back. And he gave it to me, because the game was trash.
Wow, like, got the guy to give you the money back? That, like, never happens. Dude, wow.
Because I went midnight launch.
Yeah.
I went to the midnight that first game came out, and I told him, I said, I'm not hearing good things about this. And I remember, because someone said there was no solo campaign, and there's too many microtransactions. I had it for at least 12 hours. And I brought it back, and I said, I want my full money back. And he's like, all right, cool.
Yeah, so there you go. There you go. I ended up downloading, I had it already on the hard drive, but I ended up booting up Battlefront 2 2017. And I was like, I kind of made a little tongue-in-cheek thing where I was like, oh, this is the game that I could actually play this weekend. And I enjoyed it. I played Galactic Assault on Yavin 4, and it was fun. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll be going back to Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I was expecting to play Battlefront 2 Classic Collection for a while there, but not so much. But anyway, we're going to move on to our major topic, and that is, we had another two-parter episode for the Bad Batch, everybody. We had episode 6 and 7, Infiltration and Extraction. We have the team going back to a Clone Wars famous location. We're going back to Teth, everybody. We get to see a clone resistance working their way in the galaxy. And we get to see those clone X dudes coming in, wrecking havoc. It feels like Bourne Supremacy or something of, like, the secret agents. This really felt great. Seeing a lot of cool characters like Wolf. I'll throw it over to Milton. What was your first? We'll talk about these as we always do. Both episodes in one, we watched them together. At least I did.
Well, real quick, too, I was going to say, Chris, before we even get into this, Milton, can we get, like, your little thoughts of Bad Batch last week as well, if you don't mind? Yeah.
I think you may be muted.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Oh, yeah, we can hear you now.
Remind me of that episode. Give me a cliff note of it. Wasn't that whenever...
When Crosshair, Echo, or Crosshair and Omega are back at the base, and the creature, and they're dealing with all that stuff, and
yeah, the snow.
Yep.
Yeah. Dope. Listen, like, and this is going to tie into this week. This show has not. This particular season has not been bad at all.
Nope.
Every episode hit for me, except for episode 2. last week's episode, I think my brother and I were texting about it. He talked about all the Jurassic Park references yeah. and that type of thing. he loved that. Great, great episode. I was very pleased. Wasn't bored with it. Really enjoyed it. I mean, it's, again, has been very consistent so far. These two particular episodes, again, another two bangers. Like, I have nothing bad to say about them. I thought it's been done. It's done such a good job at pushing the narrative, developing characters, giving us great action, and not wasting time.
Exactly. That's all we wanted.
Exactly. That episode two for me was the only one, because I didn't really care about those little boys, those kids. So yeah. I think that's probably why I was just like, eh, whatever. But it still wasn't trash. I just didn't really enjoy it. But every episode other than that one has been consistent narratively, character-wise, story beats-wise, action. I cannot complain. And these two episodes were bangers. And it reminded me of, I think you mentioned the Bourne Identity series. Also reminded me of like the Manchurian Candidate type stuff. So just seeing how, you know, these clones were, they're already badasses, but to make them something of like Terminators. It reminded me of Terminator a little bit too, with how pressing these shadow clones are. I think that what they call shadows or something. But yeah, I couldn't complain. Bangers in that how he survived at the end. I don't know how. I've no complaints. These two, that's really all I can say, because I'm kind of surprised that we've been so consistent this season. But this is what I've been asking for when it comes to shows that are like 15 to 16 episodes apiece. You don't have time to waste, especially on a final season. So I've been in love with it. I can't complain. Visuals look great. Action was dope. Music was on point. Again, I just love how there are stakes. People are dying. And this show is super violent this season.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely the mature animation, right? Like, this stuff is getting just into the good visuals, like you said, but it's also these episodes were really diving deep into character again. Mayday, all those guys. It's just, this is the stuff that reminds me of, like, yeah, this is kind of the Andor feel more than anything else. Yeah. What about you, Ben? What was your reaction? Oh, go ahead.
Ben, before you go, the biggest takeaway I took from this episode was the last sentence or last dialogue that was taken away. And it's all about these guys are brothers. And there's a lot of respect. And Wolf says, the guy says, you know, he's like, collect the dead. And he's like, but sir, they're traitors. And he's like, but they're still clones. And I'm, and that's the theme I was getting throughout these past two episodes of, like, they're still a brotherhood. Because remember, they tried to tell that shadow guy, he's like, no matter what you did, you're still our brother. You're still a clone.
Yeah.
Like, oh, these clones really have a moral compass. They really have a code. Look at Crosshair not wanting to be a part of the Empire. He's like, listen, they betrayed me. There's no loyalty from the Empire. And so once Wolf is starting to see that now, hopefully, letting his brothers go. So, but that sentence just touched me at the end when he said, but they're still clones. It's like, that's respect. Like, these are still our brothers. So.
Yeah, I would say for me, I mean, I can pretty much agree with everything you just said there, Milton. Like, the episode was so good. It's definitely the better Andor in terms of action, that's for sure. but yeah, I'm really liking these episodes, like the way they're going. Like these two episodes, I mean, I always use my sports analogy, Milton, kind of like our record on the season. Arguably, this is either 6-1 or 7-0 on the season so far. Like this season is very, very good. Like, they've hit on every episode virtually. So, you know, it's no surprise, like, they did really good this week. And, like, it kind of makes me think, guys, I'm like, man, like, is it just they, like, took feedback going into the third season and were like, okay, guys, we got to step it up here because people are kind of, like, roller coastering the last two seasons of the show. And it's just, like, it just feels like the quality went from like here to here. Like, it just went completely, you know, up an elevator basically. So it's nice to see the quality stepped up. You know, the action overall is really good. Like, you have, you know, like you said, it's the, like, the good brotherhood, like, respecting of the clones are still there, even with them going through all of this, which is nice. And, like, just to see this two-part episode pay off is so good, just because it's like it's a nice, you know, springboard into this back half of the season. So like, yeah, I just think overall, yeah, I'm just really, really liking the direction they're going with this, and all the characters are going in a good direction too. Like you have Crosshair dealing with his stuff. You have Omega dealing with, like, Omega's kind of like, what do you call him? Kind of like a mediator between Crosshair and like the bad, normal Bad Batch people. Like, you know, you have kind of have that. You have, like, you have Hunter, you have Wrecker, you have all these different relationships going on that are so nice to see, getting developed, and they're actually getting paid off. Cause that's the thing, you know, we've had before with prior seasons of the show where it's like, you know, I mean, what relationship's getting paid off with Cid? Another mission? Another side mission? So, like, it's nice, like, we're getting actual meaningful stories paying off for the crew members. And it feels like there's just a little more stakes on the line, like, the, you know, them getting exposed and, like, yeah, I just overall, I mean, that's kind of like my overview of it. And then, of course, we'll get into more details, but... Yeah,
I want to start chronologically talking about this whole idea of a separatist and a republic senator working together. I thought that was a really neat idea. Like we're seeing the birth of the rebellion, essentially, between Chuchi and whatever this guy was, a separatist that we've seen. This guy, I think that the planet they were on was, I'm forgetting. It's not Renvar. That's a snow planet from Battlefront. But Raxus.
I get it.
Raxus. They're on Raxus. We've seen that planet before, and so I like that idea. It reminds me of, like, going back to The Force Unleashed with, like, the meetings of the senators, the deleted scene in Revenge of the Sith that I seen recently, thanks to the supercut I watched. They threaded that in there. So it's neat to see that, you know, while this is a very focused story that's based on what happens with the clones, we're still getting a wider picture of Star Wars as a whole with the backdrop of, okay, what happens to these senators? What happens to the separatists that weren't assassinated by Anakin on Mustafar? Like, there's still a lot of people out there. And what is their belief going to be going forward with the Empire and the Emperor? Are they going to see eye to eye? Are they going to, you know, these people are maybe the same people that are going to be the leaders of the rebellion someday. So I thought that was really cool to open up the two episodes with that, because I wasn't sure where this episode was going to go. I was like, oh, is this the plot or where are we going? But it was nice to see.
Oh yeah, it's.
I agree. I think benefit of these episodes, and I was just thinking about this like a second ago, but this wasn't really two episodes to me. This felt like a very much a part one and a part two. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Because I thought that episode one of this particular two parter, it streamed in perfectly into how episode two ended. I mean, it very much wasn't a standalone episode, each one. It's like you needed this to be a back-to-back, you know, because if it would have ended, I forget how, oh, episode one ended what? With the explosion of the shadow trooper, like destroying the base, I think. So, yeah, that's a great ending, but I think you needed the second episode to pay off that meeting that you mentioned. Pay off like the seeds of the rebellion, and clearly, you know, them still looking for Tantus and trying to get those clones off of the planet. It was a perfect two-parter that needed to be together.
Yeah. Here we go again. I'm a sucker for the clones. I'm a sucker for this whole idea of just what happens to clones, what happens to the Empire, what's going on with this, and we're getting this deep dive, and now we're seeing the seeds of the rebellion with the clone troopers themselves. Like, these guys are the guys that are getting, we're gonna hear in I'm telling you this, we're gonna hear in future books down the line, whatever happens in this season, we're gonna be seeing like future rebellion leaders in future books and stuff, like referring back to the clone uprising and all the stuff that we're seeing in Bad Batch. I think this is gonna really help inspire a lot of people, because we know they can't win. Whatever they try to do, whatever small victory they might get, they're going to ultimately fail. And that's going to be in the history book, so to speak, even though if the Empire will try to erase it. So we're seeing Star Wars history here. that might play itself to be a precursor from like the Battle of Scarif, for instance, and things like that. So, but to see them have that base of operations, to see them go back, I already talked about this movie a little bit earlier today, the Clone Wars movie, and we're seeing the Battle of Teth, and we're seeing how run down that place was, and just how they're working out of that was just like a really nice detail. Like, why invent something if you can just pull something back that we haven't seen in literally years at this point? We've never seen that location after the fact, to my knowledge, since. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, agreed 100%. You know, I think the biggest benefit about what we've been seeing, especially with these last two episodes, is the biggest word is consistency and tying in things from previous seasons of Rebels or from Clone Wars. And you make a great point about how we know how this is going to turn out. They're not going to win whatever they think they're going to win. Now, it's going to help build upon their small battles and their ultimate end goal of beating the Empire. However, spoilers, you know, we all know how that plays out. But it's nice to see what's being planted and what's being seeded in to bring it all together.
Oh, yeah. It really is. Like, that's one of the best parts of this season, is just seeing how they're, like, you know, kind of like building out the backstory / history, like you were saying, Chris, like that people will reference, like, oh, I mean, heck, you could even get this thing referenced from the bad guy's point of view. Maybe, like, if we get another show or something, and, you know, the Emperor pops up in it and he'll reference, like, the clone uprising, blah, 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 years ago, blah, 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 you know, something like that. Or heck, this could be a thing even mentioned in like a future video game. Like, mm-hmm. What if like in Fallen Order coming up? Like, what if they mention that or something? So like, there's plenty of opportunities for them to like mention this entire thing. And you know, like you guys both said, like we know they can't like succeed in this mission, obviously. But it makes me wonder what type of like victory they'll have for this season. You know, will it be just like going back to Pabu and like saving those people or something, or will it be something bigger? Because I feel like based on these episodes up to this point, I'm like thinking more and more there's a chance we might not get them directly discovering or going back to Tantus potentially. Maybe they do and then re-escape. Like, I don't know, maybe you get like Omega capture, maybe something happens. But like, I don't know if they're gonna end up destroying Tantus.
Right.
Like, which like yeah. you know what I'm saying, Milton? Because it's kinda like I can't explain it, but I just feel like they can't destroy it.
They can't. Know. And here's why. And I'm gonna just tell you one movie, The Rise of Skywalker. They can't. Because The Rise of Skywalker pretty much validates that Tantus was successful in its own way. Mm-hmm. You know, even though he couldn't quite grasp like an actual body itself to contain the M count, it worked somehow, because obviously Snoke came from that, and then obviously Palpatine was able to transfer his essence over to somebody. So it had to have worked. And Tantus was seen in
Mando, wasn't it?
Mando.
Wait, it was.
So like, wasn't he
there?
Two or three?
No, I don't think so.
I thought it was season two. It was the episode that what's his name directed? Carl Weathers, I thought.
Oh no, that was in Navarro.
No, there was another one then. I know we saw Tantus, because remember we saw like weren't they on Tantus at one point?
Nope. That was Navarro, because they went to this outpost. They're like, oh, it's on the other side of the planet. And that's when they had the blue guy. And then they had the guys in the tanks. Yep.
That's
Here's the thing, right? Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, if you look at the opening crawl to A New Hope, it says they have just had their first victory as the Rebel Alliance. I guess if they're not technically the Rebel Alliance, they could still have a victory. I guess, you know what I mean? Like, because I was thinking, if they destroy it, that's a pretty big victory for whoever, if they destroy this, like, top secret, like, cloning facility thing. But if no one knows it exists in the first place, then they could destroy it and nobody would know it the better.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Project Necromander ain't no just, like, Project Necromander, in my opinion, is pretty much the Death Star program, too. Like, that's how, in my opinion. because yeah, like you need the level. One that,
yeah,
yeah, like Palpatine was all about Project Necro. I mean, he's going. I mean, he don't just go places to go. He showed up.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's like our president showing up to some type of like big nuclear bomb that we're looking to create to like, you know, whatever. Like presidents don't just show up to places. Leaders don't show up to places.
Mm.
So that's, you know, and also you have the Death Star, which is, what was it? Stardust? Project Stardust? Yep. Those are probably the top two projects that Palpatine was so focused on. And obviously his foreplanning of the final order, you know, so it's, yeah, you're right. I think I think you're allowed to have small victories, but this wasn't like their actual like rebellion, you know, victory.
Well, you know, guys, I think it's trending now that we've like talked this out a little more. I think it's trending toward a direction, you know, we've had Palpatine already confirm like this project is of great importance, blah 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 blah. That whole thing. I think it's trending toward, if they would go back to Tantus, maybe it's going to, because I could see it going like this. It could be kind of like a moral victory for the Bad Batch crew, where it's like they go back, they cause severe damage, but then they have to run because Palpatine and Vader show up and they're like, we can't defeat those guys. We got to get out of here. And like they just escape. And then, you know, maybe we have like an epilogue of Palpatine walking through like the remains of Tantus or something like that. Just because it's like, you know, we already have the precedent set. Like Tantus is on Palpatine's radar. So that means there's a chance we get Palpatine or his big like enforcer dog, Darth Vader, to show up potentially. So I just think it's maybe trending in that sort of a direction where maybe they, if they would go back there, they could cause some damage or get some clones out. But then you're going to, you know, it's kind of going to be our Rogue One thing. We reference that a lot this podcast, but it's going to be kind of our Rogue One thing of like, oh, you know, when Tarkin dispatches Vader, like, hey, go take care of it. You know, I could see it trending in that sort of a direction because, you know, we're building up all these clones. I mean, we even have, like, the titles for the final few episodes. Like, like, Clone Force 99 or one of the two. Like, you know, we have some, like,
the pretty Calvary's interesting... The Calvary's here and all
or,
that
thing. Or the Calvary. Yeah, the Calvary is here. So it's like, maybe we rescue some clones, but maybe we get scared off too and you know they escape. So like I think a lot of this stuff is just building, and then you have, you know, the stuff going on with our main characters. You know, I think it's just trending kind of in that direction, with especially how much clone work we're getting. Like, you know, like you mentioned, Milton, earlier with Wolf and the clones, like we're being so respectful about the clone troopers. Like the clone uprising is definitely coming, I think, though.
Let's talk a little about the Clone X dudes. These guys are battle-hardened. They have a lot of brainwashing going on, obviously. We've seen them last season. This is the first season we've seen them. They even make a reference like, oh, yeah, we dealt with one on Coruscant or whatever. So these guys are deadly as heck. I mean, these people are, they're highly trained. You know, now I have a better reference. This reminds me of the Winter Soldier. That's what I was thinking the whole time. I was like, this feels like that movie. It really does.
You know. No, that's a good point. Yeah, Winter Soldier. Like I said, the Bourne Identity guys, the Manchurian
Candidate. You know, I was gonna tag you in our group chat this week. You know what they remind me of, actually, from our Arrowverse, if you remember from... I've been slowly rewatching Arrow. I'm in season 4. Remember when Damian Dark has those ghost guys? Like,
oh, yeah.
The assassins? They remind me so much of the ghosts from Arrow, it's not even funny. I'm like, dude, these things are, like, copy and pasted almost, like, ghost out of Arrow into Star Wars. Like, it feels just like that, because they're such, like, specialized, and they're, like, you know, kind of always in the wind.
True, and then these guys would kill themselves, too, if they get caught. Because when they took out, I don't know, boys mingle.
Yep.
One of the really cool parts I liked about this episode is Hauser, you know, he like comments to Crosshair, because Crosshair is like talking with Omega, and he changed. He literally says like, oh, you've changed, right? Because it's just interesting to see how this little girl clone has really made an impact on these battle-hardened soldiers. Just to see that, see a character acknowledge that, I thought that was great.
Yeah, no, that was very touching. I think that's important. That goes back to the character growth. I mean, we all know Crosshair still isn't fully trusted, and we should not fully trust him. However, to see where we saw him from episode 1 of season 1 till now, there's dramatic change. And I think that's great. And to see that consistent change throughout the season has been nothing but a compliment to the writing.
Go ahead, man.
Oh, for sure. Like, Crosshair has been one of the, I guess I would say, best paid off characters so far out of Bad Batch as a whole. Like, we see him go from being a villain to, you know, now he's trending in the hero direction. And now it's getting to a point with Crosshair where it's like, now as a viewer, it's making me nervous because it's like, well, you know, Chris, it's like trending toward where it's like they're going to make us like him. They're going to get him to this hero moment, and then he's going to be the sacrificial lamb for the series, I feel like. You know, I could... Oh. Like, I think it's trending. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's done. It's not even a question.
Yep.
But, I mean, they kind of did the same thing with Wrecker the first season. They were really telegraphing he was going to die. Like, they kept making Omega really chummy with him, and then he survived, so...
I think the difference is Wrecker's always been likable.
Okay, that's true.
And again, I get the setup. They want us to think that. But I think it's kind of like, look at it this way. It's kind of like whenever a superhero finally admits their identity to someone, that person they admitted to normally dies.
Yep.
So in this case, it's like we finally get to see that, we get to admit that, Crosshair isn't always a good soldier. He doesn't always follow orders, which he showed from last season. He admits it this season that, hey, they weren't loyal to me. This kid has really changed me. Likeable, heel turn, or a hero switch. Boom, done. They're going to get us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, we're continually seeing Crosshair kind of struggling with his the shaking hand, right? He's not getting all his 100% shots like that. If he was in his prime, that Clone X would have been dead along time prior in this episode. He would have headshotted him, no problem. So the whole idea of that going on. But the stuff with Wolf I thought was really interesting. Like, he gets called in to deal with the situation. The Empire doesn't tell him what is happening. He soon finds out himself that, like, what are the clones doing here? He thinks Rex is dead. He did mask his death pretty good, I guess, because remember at the end of Clone Wars, him and Ahsoka, the bear of the lightsabers, he was presumed dead. I liked seeing the kind of, even though they're both for the Empire, they were not even on the same page, whether it be Wolf's men and then this Clone X dude. And he was like, oh, he's gone rogue because he's trying to kill him and all this stuff, and he's shooting him out of the sky. It's like, I like that. That was great. That was great, kind of, okay, what is happening here? We got these differences. The Empire, and it shows you, and it goes to show you, this is exactly why Wolf leaves the Empire. I don't know if we'll ever see Wolf again in this series, but we know if you watched Rebels, that eventually he does leave the Empire, and he still has ties to the Empire, because he makes that call on Ezra and Kanan to the Empire at that one point, but then he does join them, so it's kind of crazy, but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's always great, like, you know, especially it's like seeing characters like Wolf or like any of these characters from like the Clone Wars era, like, you know, it's such a nice payoff for all of us Clone Wars fans, specifically. Like, and I think the good thing is with this show, they've done a good job over the past few seasons when you get a cameo type of thing like Wolf or like Rex or whoever, they've done such a good job even in the prior seasons where it's like, you know, you still don't need to watch 7 seasons of Clone Wars to understand who these characters are. Like, they still isolate them enough where you get it. Like, you know, you get this guy, former clone, you know, has feelings for former clones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, versus, like, you know, I don't need to know his whole backstory to understand what's going on in this episode of Bad Batch. So I really like how they've blended it perfectly, I think.
Oh, yeah. So any last thoughts? We'll give it a score out of 10 here. I'll throw it over to you, Ben.
I would say, like, for me, I think the episodes overall both were really good. Like Milton was saying earlier, I view it more as like a one episode thing than a two episode, just mm-hmm. because it's, you know, it's a two episoder or it's a two parter. So, you know, action was good. Story was good. Characters are trending in a good direction. You know, we got some good, like, external references. Like, it's always fun seeing those Jurassic Park, Easter eggs, basically. And just overall, like I just really, I really like the direction of this season. And the exciting thing for fans, you know, we're heading into the 8th episode, which is the last episode reviewers have. So, like, then we're going to be going, you know, then we're going to be going in totally blind in a week, which is really cool. So, you know, overall, it's just exciting heading into the back half of this season, knowing, like, I say it week to week. It's nice for once to be excited about Star Wars heading into the next week versus, like, you know, when we had prior seasons of this show, it was like you'd cross your fingers and go, well, let's hope it's good next week because this week was Sid. You know, now we're just like, I'm genuinely excited for next week's Bad Batch episode. I am. Like, I text, like, this past Wednesday, Tuesday night, I texted my cousin and I texted him and was like, man, it's nice to actually be excited for Star Wars tomorrow. Like, it's actually a nice feeling. So, like, with all of that, like, the Bad Batch has earned it. So, for me, I would say this episode was a really strong 9.
Yeah. Over to you, Milton.
Yeah. Like I mentioned earlier, to me, this is very much a single episode. I think it was a seamless transition from beginning to end. Love the action. Love the dialogue. Love the themes. Again, super violent this whole entire season, especially this episode. Like, when they kill someone, they kill someone. They're not playing around. I think overall, these episodes in particular were very consistent from the first minute to the last minute. I thought seeing the character development of the clones was really, really cool. Like, always seeing the relationship between Wolf and Rex and Crosshair. And who's the other guy that was mad at him? I forget his name. But just seeing, like, these overall changes occur in front of us for the best, knowing that, you know, we are approaching the back half of the season. So I'm just curious. And I think Ben makes a great point. It's nice to be excited about Star Wars being a weekly thing again. And it's crazy that most recently, a lot of the stuff that I've really been enjoying with Star Wars has been the animations, which shouldn't surprise anyone because they tend to be very consistent about the work and the writing of the animation series. So overall, to me, this episode was really, really good. I felt this is a good, solid 9.5 out of 10 with both episodes together.
All right. High marks. I'm going to give this one an 8.5. I thought it was a great episode. I'll echo whatever you guys have also said, all the things you guys have said. As far as for me, it was just, the action was great. The tone of it was fantastic. The lighting, very dark, which really suited the mood well at night. They're on the ashes. It's crazy, right? Because you're like, this is a different era, but they're fighting on the ashes of the Clone Wars, right? Because we know this show is basically a sequel to the Clone Wars, obviously. So it was nice thematic resonance there, harkening back to that. Seeing Wolf. Oh, by the way, another awesome character costume. The Rex costume was badass with that cloak that was he was wearing. I was like, I would love an action figure of that at some point. That looks awesome. Stuff with the Rebels, the early Rebel stuff, the Separatists and the Republic joining forces, all that good stuff. So, yeah, I will give this one an 8.5 out of 10. So there you have it. A little bit of housekeeping. Next week, I'm going to be in Boston for the PAX East video game convention. So we will not have an episode next week. We'll be back the week following that to talk about next week's episode and the week after that's episode. Still trying to nail down the time when we'll be recording that one. But yeah, because it is going to be Easter weekend, so we're not going to record our normal time because we'll all be with our families. So it'll probably be earlier in the week for that episode. But yeah, I'll put it out on socials, wherever that will be found. And by the way, the socials would be, let's say, right here, obviously. I'll put a post out. But you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/StarRaptor or X, whatever you want to call it these days. You can find my writings over on starraptor.substack.com. And yeah, make sure you go ahead and subscribe to youtube.com/StarRaptor. So whether it be anything, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. But yeah, I'll have you guys plug your stuff. Go ahead.
You can find me at X at MiltonWeber7 or Instagram at Milton7Weber. Appreciate y'all listening. Appreciate y'all watching. Hopefully you guys enjoy your holiday coming up, because I know that's a big holiday for a lot of families. Chris, hopefully you have a good time at your convention this upcoming week. We pass out buttons and stickers for the podcast.
That's right. Yeah, if you see me there, I'll be around all Thursday through Sunday of the con, so you'll find me. We'll see what happens. What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, you could find me on X and Instagram at Real Ben Maynard, always talking fitness or Star Wars. And this week, probably just going to be introducing the lady to Return of the Jedi and see how that goes. So that should be, or, well, she'll probably watch it before I even see her, actually. You know, I'm sure I'll get feedback on Return of the Jedi. So yeah, I have that going on. And other than that, with me personally, just going to be, you know, starting to tear through Survivor's Quest, because I'm, after that first chapter, I'm already like really interested in it. Cause like I said, it just really felt like classic Star Wars. So I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah. So there you have it, for Milton, for Ben, for I, Chris, AKA Staraptor. Enjoy the rest of your St. Patrick's Day, and we'll see y'all here in 2 weeks' time. Have a good one, everybody. End transmission.